pois ela é minha menina. Eu sou o menino dela.
Well, good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Thursday. It's the 27th of June. It's a sunny day. It seems to be a nice day. Hopefully it is the same. Those same weather conditions exist where you are, wherever you happen to be listening to us. One of the things that we learned in during the fun drive is that I think out of 35 out of the 50 states, people were listening at one time or another. It's fairly amazing to see. Listening and giving. So we don't even know what the people who weren't giving where they were at. But good morning, everyone. It's very nice. I think we have a good show for you. I think you'll enjoy it. If you don't worry. There's another one tomorrow.
Yesterday was fascinating.
We'll just try again. We'll give it another shot and see how it's going. We have a great panel this morning. Let me introduce them to you. I will say, an odd night last night. I have in my life dealt with depression and anxiety and panic and been treated for it and go to regular checkups and all that kind of thing. I have never before in my mind had a night terror. And last night I had a night terror. Now I am self-diagnosing. I don't know exactly what that is. I've looked it up, obviously, and it seems that what I had is very consistent with what a night terror is.
Dreaming that,
as opposed to a nightmare?
A nightmare will be a very troubling moment in your sleep that often you remember. A night terror you don't really remember, and you wake up screaming and a pool of sweat, and your heart is just beating 80 miles an hour, and all of the covers are on the floor, and your wife looks at you like she's ready to check in at a Hampton Inn. So and here's the disappointing part. You don't remember what it was about. Here are the two things I remember about it. I was wearing a purple shirt, and there was a woman on the other building, on the roof of the other building, who was weirdly collecting pie. I don't know. That is all I remember. Have fun with the therapist next time, Joe. So I was reading up on this in the middle of the night after I had gone through this, because it feels like you've gone through 20 rounds. And so I'm trying to rest, you know, just trying to calm down a little bit from this terror. And a lot of blood, a lot of violence, it's just awful. And so I'm reading up on it, and it said, well, of course, stress is one thing, but it can be something. It can be perhaps something that you knew medicine, which is possible in my case, or whatever. There are different things that could cause it. One of the things that they say that you can do to prevent it is to just calm, have that half hour to an hour before bed. Don't watch television. Don't read. Just calm. You know, just to be calm. And I said that to my wife, Kelly, and she said, well, no debate for you.
That was going to be my prognosis, was just, you know, you dreamed it was November and things had gone off the rails.
No debate for you. So I'm trying just to be puppies, kittens, flowers today, just a lot of, you know, positive things. And so to deal with that, we're going to have the pilot, I believe, if we can swing it, we're going to have the pilot of the Wienermobile in today. We have the Wienermobile parked out in our parking lot, and it is so cool. And we're going to have, I think, the pilot in. And I don't believe that if I talk to the pilot of the Wienermobile today that it's possible for me to have a night terror tonight.
Correct. Will somebody be singing the song?
Yeah. Well, hopefully they will.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe they'll.
Sarah has a beautiful voice, I heard.
Maybe they will join us in a sing-along. It'll be very nice. Or they will initiate a sing-along. We have a great group this morning, and let me introduce them all to you. We begin with Teresa Bourgeois. Teresa is a public policy and communications expert, a dear friend to this program, has an amazing CV, and we are thrilled that she is with us. Good morning.
Good Good morning. Delighted to be here. And this is the first time I've been on since the end of the fund drive. So thanks to everybody. I volunteered for days. Shout out to Nancy, a regular listener who was sitting next to me and helped me figure out how to use all the technology.
Yeah, you did a couple days. You were very nice. You were very, very sweet. There was one point there where I thought we could have a panel. We had Henler, we had you, and we had somebody else.
Judy stopped by.
Oh, Judy, yeah. I was like, this is great. We can just do a panel. We're ready for a show.
I was ready to go. Anyway,
very nice.
Love talking to people. They were great, amazing from all over the place. And thanks to all those who support, and you guys were fantastic.
Well, thank you. Always nice to have you, and thank you for helping out, too. That's beyond the call of duty. Chief of Staff and Vice President for Strategy and Policy at Bard College, Malia Dumont. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Well, I was actually awake in the middle of the night as well, not because I had night terror, but because I have jet lag. I've just come back from 3 weeks overseas and work travel, and I can manage going overseas better than, like, after you come back is when it's harder to readjust. So,
were you anywhere
that you can tell us?
Two weeks in China, 4 days in Israel, and then an overnight in Vienna.
Okay, that sounds impressive.
An overnight. I mean, like, that balance is a little amazing,
yeah.
But you still, like, maybe 3 days in Vienna to relax.
Yeah,
that would help.
It's around the world.
Work on the travel agency. I want to congratulate Malia, and hopefully you all will join me in congratulating Malia. Malia is about to be promoted for the Army Reserve. She's currently a major, and she is getting a promotion to Lieutenant Colonel. Wow.
Yay. Thank you very much.
Congratulations. This will be happening next week, and I know Pat Ryan is going to be making it all official, but congratulations.
Thank you.
An achievement.
I never expected when I enlisted in the Army Reserve in 1999 that I would stay in this long or that I would proceed this far. So it's really humbling.
You get a pay bump with that?
I mean, you do, but in the reserve, it doesn't end up being that much because you're only serving for 1 week and a month. So it'll add up to, I don't know, like $150 extra, maybe. I don't know.
But that is just we're all intensely, incredibly proud of you, and so happy that you are there and here, and I was going to say and on our side, and you can read into that however you wish, quite frankly, but thank you very much, and again, congratulations. That's an amazing achievement and quite well deserved. Judy Patrick is with us. Judy is Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association, where she quite frankly is a general. Judy, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I had a great night's sleep, and I hope you report in tomorrow morning and let us know if the Wienermobile has fixed your problem.
I hope so.
Me too.
Yeah. It's the strange moment where your heart is just jumping out of your chest. And my wife is like, "Are you, like, is everything okay? Are you all right?" And I'm trying to explain to her, and I'm just saying things. You know, and the guy, and there was a bar, and then they went in.
and the purple shirt, and the pie lady,
and she just looking at me going, "All right, honey." Well, good morning, all. Welcome. We have a lot to talk about this morning. There's just all kinds of crazy things happening. Thank you. the Wienermobile swag is starting to drip in. We have a lot to talk about this morning, and we will get to it. And I want to begin with, this is just, you know, one of those stories that you just like, how did this happen? But, so the Supreme Court, we were following the Supreme Court very closely yesterday. I would say very closely yesterday, trying to figure out, by the way, did you all get stories last night?
Yes.
Okay, I wonder why I didn't. Okay.
Just talk about the debate.
Just checking. But anyway, we were talking about this idea of the decisions that would be coming out of the Supreme Court at 10 o'clock. And only, I believe, two decisions came out yesterday, and they weren't the good ones, as far as none of them good, but as far as newsworthy as to where they were. So Then late yesterday, or middle of the day, I guess, yesterday, there was a report that for a blip, for a moment, there was a online, the Supreme Court, a document posted online suggested that the Supreme Court was poised to temporarily allow emergency abortions in Idaho. And it was eerily similar to the Dobbs decision that was leaked, where the entire decision was leaked a few weeks right before it was released in full. But the document was posted, and the unsigned opinion dismissed the case on procedural grounds, stating that the court, for now, would not address the merits of the dispute, according to the 22-page document, which was published by Bloomberg News, because they were actually watching the Supreme Court website and saw that it had gone up, noticed this, and quickly reported on it. Such a decision would reinstate a ruling by a lower federal court that had paused Idaho's near-total ban on abortion and said hospitals in the state could perform emergency abortions if necessary to protect the health of the mother. So, two issues I think that we want to discuss in this. One is actually, of course, the depth of the decision, which we don't know for sure, but we certainly can expect that this was the decision. But before we get to that, Judy, how does this happen?
Well, thank God for that Bloomberg reporter, because I know the type. They're on their computer, they refresh, refresh, refresh. They want to see what's coming out, because it wasn't clear whether or not there would be another decision that day. So they're always refreshing. Cynically, I'm telling you that I think that the Supreme Court had decided not to release this decision before the debate because it makes the right wing look less right wingish. And so hold it until after the debate, because this gives former President Trump a leg up on the abortion debate, as crazy as that sounds. And I think somebody said, I think we should get that out there ahead of time anyway. And I think that's what happened.
So in other words, it's loaded in the computer, it's ready to go, and then accidentally or accidentally on purpose, it goes up for a little while.
It could have been that apparently all the justices filed their opinions, and maybe another justice wanted to change theirs at the last minute, so they wanted to hold up. But I think, like the immunity case, it's hard to believe that would come out today before the debate tonight. I think that the abortion decision, they wisely would have thought, no, we're going to wait until after the debate to release this. And then somebody on the court disagreed and said, no, I'm going to get that out there one way or another.
You think this helps or hurts Trump?
I think it helps Trump. As crazy as that sounds, because what essentially it's just done is pause it. Why did they take it in the first place if they were ultimately going to decide, oh, we shouldn't have taken this in the first place and held us captive for a while? They didn't solve the bigger issue. They made it seem, in this case, it makes it seem like somehow the Supreme Court's decision in Dobbs was not as radical as it is. What we're debating at the Supreme Court is whether or not medical professionals can intervene to help a woman who is near death. She has to be really close to death now in Idaho, or she had to be really close to death in Idaho before medical professionals could intervene. Now she can be farther away from death, but we're still not allowing abortions in Idaho for women who simply just want them.
The court's publications unit inadvertently and briefly uploaded a document to the court's website, according to SCOTUS spokeswoman Patricia McCabe. The court's opinion in Moyle versus United States and Idaho v. United States will be issued in due course, and the spokeswoman would not say if this was a final decision, and made the point repeatedly that the final decision would eventually be released. Malia.
Well, based on what you said, we don't know why this was uploaded or not, but it's clear that political calculations are going into how and when the Supreme Court releases its decisions. There's no huge surprise, but it seems like that's that's more common now with this court than it has been in the past, that it's not just the content of the decisions, but also how and when they're released. And they're very aware of the effect that that could have on the public. I was really struck in this article by one of the things that these kind of legal maneuverings force doctors to do, which is to try to distinguish between an emergency and when someone's life is actually in danger. I mean, I don't know what the difference between those things. I mean, I guess maybe not all emergencies are life-threatening, but it's just so...
If you see a woman with pie, you're close.
Right. It's just... It just puts such a burden, a ridiculous burden on doctors to parse things in ways that don't make medical sense. And so it's an injustice to women in Idaho and the doctors there who want to treat them.
So I think that this is, you know, we're going to discuss this more when we come back, but it's really fascinating as to, I mean, obviously the timing, the merits of the case, and where we go from here. But, I'm looking forward to hearing from you, Teresa, on this, because as I said earlier, it's so reminiscent of the early release of the Dobbs decision and sort of what was going on. And I agree, Judy, of was the debate in the mind? It certainly seems like perhaps it was, but we could only speculate on that. Which is why we have this radio show. Speculate away. We'd love to hear from you. You can speculate too. panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us, and we thank you for being here. We have Judy Patrick, Malia DeMont, and Teresa Bourgeois. We have heard from two out of three of our panelists on the subject up for bids at this moment, which is the leaking. I don't know. I don't even know if it's a leak. It was a posting and an accidental on purpose, maybe posting of a decision or an apparent decision, one document, a report regarding the from the Supreme Court regarding abortion in Idaho. Teresa Bourgeois.
Yeah, I'm not a student of the courts in terms of the history of the court. So I really don't know if in the past there has been this timing issue with cases as there seems to be more recently. But this may have been a staff accident or it may have been accidentally on purpose. I agree with you, Judy. I thought you were saying the opposite, but I do agree with you in terms of I think this does benefit, at least on a temporary basis, Trump, because I think that they're clearly on the wrong side of this issue, and they know that. And this, even though it doesn't reverse, it creates this weird cover, and I think the decision shows that it's temporary. But I think it's important to step back, and I just, when I read this New York Times line, the sentence, and I'm quoting, a lower federal court paused the Idaho's near total ban on abortion and said hospitals in the state could perform emergency abortions if necessary to protect the health of the mother. And I thought, we just have to pause for a moment and just think about that. How did we get here? That is so clearly a decision between a doctor and a patient. And the government has taken that decision away. I mean, the court has taken that decision away and put it in the hands of the government. How can the life of the mother or the emergency health of the mother be a government decision? What kind of position does that put doctors in? This is just stunning to me. But here we are, and we know how we got here. We got here because of Donald Trump. Donald Trump is not a policy person. He's a transactional person. And he traded votes, the promise of votes, for the agreement that he would pick Supreme Court justices off of the Federal Society list who are, you know, ultra-conservative. And so here we are. What are the consequences of that? These are life and death consequences. And this decision is not a permanent decision. They basically decided not to decide, but while they're not deciding, they're going to pause the implementation of the rule, right? And only, and they were clear that they're only temporarily pausing it. And on the one side, you have Alito saying, make a decision. The decision is clear here. This should not be allowed, right? And on the other hand, you have Justice Ketanji Jackson saying, this is clear, make a decision. This is a doctor-patient decision, right? But they decided not to decide. And in the meantime, out in America, women's lives are at risk, and doctors have to live in fear of losing their license, losing their jobs. And we've heard story after story after story of women whose lives were at risk and who survived to tell about it. But, you know, this is just, this is a very difficult situation.
I don't disagree with Judy, but I was interested when you said that you thought that this could help Trump, at least for tonight. But it also does really point to the sort of all over the place-ness of his response to this issue.
Indeed. He has not been clear at all about where he stands. Where he stands is where he will get the most votes, and that means he will not ever give a clear answer. He always says it's up to the states, and which most people don't understand that will lead to essentially abortion bans in a lot of the states. We have a federal government for a reason, and that is to step in when there are fundamental rights at stake. And man, this seems clear to me. You know, I would like to say that the Supreme Court has a public information office. They could have been much clearer and transparent yesterday. Well, just tell us, was this a decision or wasn't it? I mean, no, we're going to do it on our own terms in our own fashion. Well, at that point, that cow had already left the barn. Let us know, eliminate the confusion for Americans, because right now we're spinning. We're not sure that that was the decision. We're pretty clear that it was, but people in public service have a responsibility to let the public know what the real deal is, and at this point, we don't know.
But we do know debate tonight, House and Senate folks up for election, right? The Senate's in the balance, the House is in the balance, and the presidency's in the balance. And we do know where the Republicans are on this issue. And we do know that the Republicans are going to pack the Supreme Court. We do know that the Republicans are going to pack the lower courts, continue to try to pack the lower courts if they get in. And we do know that on the Senate side, one of the things that the Biden administration has done is to try to appoint as many judges as possible, because the Obama administration had been blocked over and over again. They had not been able to get many judges appointed. The Trump administration got a lot of judges appointed, but now the Biden administration, because I think they understand how the Senate works, they have been able to add more judges. So if the people, the voters out there listening, if they're concerned about these kinds of issues and the range of other issues are going to be before the courts, then they need to vote that way in November. Right? They need to vote that way in November. And yes, rhetorically, Trump is all over the place on this issue. But rhetorically doesn't matter. Where policy comes, he is clearly on the side of the Federalist Society. Right? That's where he is by his actions. They say, don't tell me what you value. Show me your budget, and I'll tell you what you value. Show you my decisions. Just like on the education right now, he's all of a sudden saying this use of euphemism, we're going to move education back to the states. Well, why is he doing that? Because he had been saying, we're going to, you know, shut down the education department. But that doesn't go over very well, because the reality of that for education and the front lines is bad. So now he's using the euphemism, we're going to send it back to the states. Same thing he's doing with abortion. Listen to him. He's telling you what he's doing.
But you and I know that. We all know what you just said. The average American doesn't, and that's why the rhetoric matters so much. In a poll, 50% of Americans blame Joe Biden for the overturning of Roe. I mean, but there's a misunderstanding, misinformation is out there, and it's perpetuated in large part by Trump's mealy-mouth discussion of abortion, where he is all over the
place.
But
he has to be held to account for it. Just like, what about the five members of Congress, Republican members of Congress here in New York State, who you know, ended up flipping the house. If we can flip that, you flip the house back to the Democrats. Where are they on these issues? You know, where's Congressman Lawler on these issues? Where's Congressman Esposito? Are they with Trump? Or are they with these women whose lives are in danger? Right? Because these are complex issues. These health questions are very, very complex when it comes right down to it. I sat through a number of hearings when I was working in the Senate on these issues. You know, and they talk about late-term abortion, and Trump talks in graphic and grotesque terms about, you know, killing babies after they're born. But if you talk to doctors and women and parents, these are often just heart-wrenching decisions. These are often parents who want to have children, but the health situation is such that the child will never live, right? Often, you know, the brain is outside of the cavity. I don't want to get too graphic, but these are awful, horrible medical situations that should not be resolved by the courts. They need to be resolved by the doctors.
I go back to one of the questions that you brought up, Judy, which is, if the Supreme Court was going to send this back on procedural terms, why did they agree to hear this case in the first place? And whether or not it helps Trump in tonight's debate, I'm not sure. But it seems like, in a larger sense, it's probably a win for the Republicans, because there's a signal here. We can see from the drafts that have been written that there isn't a majority of justices who are saying things like, this is an overreach by the state. So if basically it almost seems like instructions to send it back to the state, like how to make this ban stick so that when it comes back in front of the court again, they won't dismiss it on procedural terms. So that to me is one of the reasons they might have taken this case is to signal how to move this case forward so that it can stand up to procedural challenges.
That sounds like a night terror, doesn't it, Joe?
It really does. We're going to, yeah, it does. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to take a real break and talk to two of the pilots of the Wienermobile. And I feel it's like a palate cleanser for all of us as we discuss these issues this morning. We'll have fun with them. And then when we come back, I would expect we'll be close to 10 o'clock when we'll unlikely get more decisions from the Supreme Court. So we'll talk about those as well.
And debate the debate.
And of course, we'll debate the debate. We will be back with two of the pilots from the Wienermobile. I've never said that on the air. I've never gotten to say that before. But they'll be here right after this.
Por eu ser feliz, mais louco é quem...
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We're just going to take a few minutes out of our panel. To welcome two people who are, I think, goodwill ambassadors for the news sucks, and it's just, this is a lot going on, and I think it's fun if we can have people say, you don't talk about the good news enough. Well, I have to say, you know, for a lot of cynical, grizzled journalists like we have in our room, when we got the press release that the Wienermobile was coming in, you would have thought we were getting raises. It was absolutely incredible. People were just excited, and my coworkers were bringing their children in early this morning, and they were over here, and it's just an exciting, exciting moment. And I don't know what your relationship is with the Wienermobile. I always found it to be very fun and very cool to see. So it's a real pleasure to welcome from the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile the co-pilots of this vehicle, Riley Flanagan and Bridget Behrens. Hello, Riley.
Hello. Nice to meet you.
Very nice to meet you. Welcome. Thank you so much for being with us. And Bridget, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having us.
It's such a pleasure. So what is it like to take to the highways of this great country of ours in a 7,000-pound hot dog?
Oh, it is incredible. We get to take the Wienermobile onto what we call the hot dog highways and wave to people. We get a lot of people honking and smiling. So we really like to bring joy and levity into the everyday life.
Well, and that's exactly what we feel that is in order today here. I'm interested, Riley, in the idea of you go around, you'll stay in a community for a couple days, and when people start seeing it, I mean, my feed is just filled with, oh, I saw the Wienermobile on 787. I saw the Wienermobile on I-87. I mean, it's a real happening.
It's really a magical thing. And when people see it, their eyes just light up. They get giddy inside. It is truly, truly just a magical experience. And I am so happy to be able to bring that joy into every community that we go to.
The last time you were here, I got to go in it for a while and take a little ride in it. And it's quite, are you shocked,
It's
Judy?
The joy ride. It's a joy ride.
It's a pretty, yeah.
Let's go cruise.
I think we went from a retirement community to CrossGates. Anyway, it was very fun. But this is something, it's been around since the 1930s, right?
Correct. Yes. 1936 is when it started. Actually, Carl's Jr., Oscar Mayer's nephew, is the one who started it. And he just started it to bring joy during the Great Depression. So
Well, not that we're in a depression now. Well, your personal condition may vary. So when you go, you park the car and you park the hot dog and the Wienermobile. And my understanding is there's several. Five, six?
We have six Wienermobiles total, and they're spread across the nation in every region. So we get to we're the representatives of the East Coast, so we get to drive around from Maine down to Virginia, sometimes a bit further south, but sometimes, yeah, we get to meet up with other hot doggers along the way.
And hot doggers are people who either like the idea of the Wienermobile or who actually consume hot dogs.
So hot doggers are actually the people who get to drive the Wienermobile.
Oh,
it's a very special
okay.
title we hold.
All right, so that's the co-pilots are the hot doggers. Oh, look at that. All right, a hot dogger. Yeah, that you're wearing a very nice jacket. That's great. And then when you park and you meet people, what kind of questions do you get?
Oh my gosh, we get
we always get asked, you know, where are you sleeping? Or, you know,
you don't sleep in that thing.
You don't
do you?
No, we don't. It's not a Wienerbago.
A Wienerbago. Nice. Yeah. So you don't sleep in it, but it seems comfortable.
Oh yes, very comfortable. We've got buns of seats in the back. We've got about six seats, and then a lot of space to bring people around.
Very nice. And then when you're out and you're meeting people, you talk to them and answer the questions they have.
Yeah, usually they're asking us, like, what is this? Or people who do know about us are just curious and asking us, you know, like, do you guys actually drive this thing? And we say, absolutely yes.
Is it hard to park?
That is definitely probably the hardest part of the job, I think, is finding a parking spot. We usually like to call ahead to make sure wherever we go.
I was interested, too, in the fact that the look of these things has changed over the years, but what I respect is that I remember seeing the Wienermobile when I was a kid at Girardi's supermarket in Pennsylvania. You're probably too young. I know you went to Temple, but probably can't. And that was always a big deal. But now they're different, and yet they still have that nostalgic feel to them.
Absolutely. We try to really cherish that tradition that Carl Mayer set 88 years ago. And still to this day, it brings people smiles and creates, as you were talking about, that I remember when moment. So hopefully people who are seeing it today are going to see it 10, 20 years down the line and say that again. I remember when.
I told the panel that we're going to have the co-pilots of the Wienermobile in, and they were all very excited. This one right next to you, Teresa, first thing she said is, has one ever been in an accident?
You know, we've never scratched our bun.
Did you ask that? Yeah, I think you answered that.
I love the lingo.
Yeah, you never scratched your buns.
We've never scratched our buns. We're actually trained extensively in what we call hot dog high, so that's a 2-week training program where we spend two full days working with retired policemen and women on how to navigate the Wienermobile, the ins and the outs. So by the time we hit the hot dog highways, as we like to call them, we're safe and we know exactly what to do in the situations.
2 years ago, a Wienermobile suffered a crash at the intersection of State Route and Fairview Avenue in East Pennsboro Township in Pennsylvania. After a Wienermobile slipped off the road and crashed into a utility pole, officials said the 7,000-pound tube stake hit a patch of ice and struck the pole, and nobody was injured. That was in 2018. So that's things are going to happen to everybody. But that answers your question.
You're at a picnic, the hot dog falls off the bun, it happens. Right?
Yeah, that's right. but as you say, you all have been safe,
and we've been safe,
yeah, that's right. But when I was surprised when I was in it by the sight lines. Like you, it doesn't seem like you're inside of a hot dog when you're driving in it. It seems very open, and you see the world when you're in there.
You really do. Yeah. We have a good view of the roads. We see a lot of people smiling and honking, and it really just brings us as many smiles as we hope it brings everybody else.
Nope. And then it's always sunny in the Wienermobile. If you look up, you can see the sunny skies above us. So,
oh, that's nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very nice. Now, let me ask you this question, which is, because I'm very interested in the Wienermobile, but I'm worried about the two of you. So, what's the career path? You go.
Oh my gosh.
Let me ask the questions your parents may be asking you. What do you do after you have driven the Wienermobile?
Well, honestly, driving the Wienermobile, it is a really great first entry-level marketing job. So if that is something you're interested, we are learning everything there is to know about marketing for Oscar Mayer and the Wienermobile. We're pitching media as well. We're calling ourselves our own hotel room. So we're learning a lot about the marketing industry and even talking to you guys and writing press releases. But then on top of that, we've had hot doggers go and do anything after this, because when you put on your resume, you were an Oscar Mayer hot dogger, everyone's going to want to talk to you. We've had people go on to be lawyers. Someone in our class is actually going to dental school next year. So really, the possibilities are endless here.
Any questions from the crowd?
Do people ever come and ask to buy hot dogs from you?
All the time.
All the time.
All the time. We look like a food truck, but we unfortunately do not sell food.
We always like to say we don't serve up hot dogs, but we do serve up the beloved Wiener Whistles.
Oh. Do you have any of those?
We do
here?
Have some today.
Oh, all right. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So
how did you get involved in this? I mean, how did you find out about it?
To be completely honest with you, I was having a rough Monday. You know how Mondays go. And I was just walking to my club that happens Monday nights, and I see the Wienermobile, and I was like, oh my God. All of a sudden, I felt that magic. I felt that joy of my day just turned around. And I walk into my club, and I actually had a Temple alumni who was recruiting for this position. And when she explained it, I was like, oh my God, I have to do that, because I felt the magic of what it brought to my day in life. So I wanted to continue spreading that joy across.
That's a great story. It's very similar to one that a cousin told me when they were recruited to join a cult at a Dead concert. But still, it's a good story. And you, Bridget?
For me, I had a very similar story, which I don't think helps your case over there.
No.
They're
out now.
Yeah.
They're okay.
I had a friend who did it 2 years ago. She was actually here at the studio, I think, 2 years ago. But shout out Keegan Schlosser. When I saw the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile was hiring, I called her up because I had known she did it, and just asked her point blank, how did you really feel about the job? And she had nothing but amazing things to say. She said the connections you make along the way,
right. The
people you get to meet every day is different, but you are always guaranteed an adventure. So from that point on, she sold me.
It's pretty amazing that this is my understanding is that when you look at, as you said, you can fit, what, six passengers?
Six passengers.
Yeah, that's great. And do you utilize that a lot?
We are just starting our hot dogger adventures, so we haven't quite used it yet, but we are always open to driving people around.
I think he's asking for a ride.
We'll talk after. We'll talk after.
The Wienermobile Uber that suddenly has taken place. Well, I wish you all the best. I do not know what it is. Do people ask you about hot dogs and what's in hot dogs and that kind of stuff?
Sometimes we do get those questions, but for the most part, people are just happy to see the
But even vegans like
you know
the Wienermobile.
What? For we do have plant-based options for people who are more in favor of that. We have partnered with NotCo and offer plant-based hot dogs and sausages. So we're trying to get something for everybody.
That's you can't beat that. That's really perfect. I love that the two of you are here. I love that you have a great story. And thank you so much for sharing with us, giving us a few rays of sunshine. I will say when I was coming down Quail Street, I just had this immense smile on my face, you know, like I always have when I drive down Quail Street, when I saw the Wienermobile parked out. You're going to be all over the area, all over the region.
Absolutely.
I don't have the – you're going to be what? You're going to Market 32 today?
Mm-hmm.
And
all week, Market 32.
Well, mm-hmm. Market 32 for the over the weekend, right?
Yes.
Correct.
Yeah, great. So you have plenty of opportunities to see them. You can go to Oscar Mayer or Wienermobile, I think, OscarMayer.com and find out more information about where they're going to be.
Ray's very excited about that.
No, it's very, very cool. We're all excited. Thank you very much. May I have a whistle?
Absolutely.
Yeah, whistles for everyone.
Oh, whistles for everyone.
You only get this if you see the Wienermobile in person. So we're going to have to show it to you after the show.
Oh, no,
I saw it.
I was. I
saw your tweet about it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, then this is all yours.
Well, thank you. I earned my whistle.
So our Instagrams, mine is OM_relishingRiley and Barbecue Bridget over there. You can say
mine is OM_BBQBridget, so you guys can follow us along on our hot dog adventures.
And thank you, and have a wonderful day, everyone.
A wonderful day. Isn't that cute? And you know, Ray, let me bring Ray into this. Ray. Oh, okay. Mike Six is on, so I can't bring Ray in. But Ray, when I was my first commercial radio job, a station WSTL, and it was Whistle Country, 14:10 a.m., and I would say Whistle News Time, 10 o'clock, and I got paid to do that. So that's when I got this job. I felt like I had gone to the promised land. So nice to have you all here. Safe travels. Have a beautiful time in our region. We're delighted to have you. It's so much fun to talk about this.
Enjoy.
Just really enjoy.
Thank you
well.
So much.
Thanks so much.
Oh, thank
Take
you
care.
So much for having us.
You guys
really
are great.
Relished
Aww.
Our time here.
Got one more in.
She had.
Got one more in. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. And we're talking about serious things as well. But our thanks to both Riley Flanagan and Bridget Behrens, who were the Wienermobile co-pilots. They're really lovely. They were telling us that they've only been doing that for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? 2 weeks, and they're doing well. So congratulations to them. And we really appreciate them taking their time out this morning.
What a fun adventure they're going on, right?
Yeah. You know? I mean, how fun, like, to be that age and going out, just taking to the highways on a hot dog. That's pretty great.
Meeting folks all around the Northeast.
Man, that's a good
gig.
Deal.
That's a good gig.
Not bad at
I'm
all.
I'm a vegetarian. It's still a good gig.
Me too. That's
well, as I said, the plant-based options are there.
Can't wait to try it.
The Supreme Court is releasing opinions. We do not know what exactly they are releasing or when. We are watching them very closely. We'll get to that as we were talking just before before our break and before talking to Bridget and Riley, we were talking about the decision, we assume the decision that was posted inadvertently on the website. We don't really know if it was inadvertent or not, but it was posted for a short period of time, enough time for a Bloomberg reporter. Do you think anybody tipped the Bloomberg reporter that it was up there?
If you know reporters, there are some of those guys that just are, they don't trust anybody. And again, the constant refresh. I've seen it.
She was interviewed this morning on NPR and said that she was just, they had somebody there at the court waiting for paper, but that she just kept watching and watching, and it popped up briefly. She was able to pull it down fast enough before it came off. But yeah, who knows?
We're getting word that the Supreme Court has rejected the multi-billion-dollar opioid settlement that shielded the Sackler family.
Yeah, wow.
That is a case that was going and deciding the fate of a $6 billion settlement between members of the Sackler family and their the bankrupt drug maker. And so it now appears that they've rejected the settlement that ultimately shielded the family. What does anyone want to opine on what that ultimately means, do you think?
You know, there are a lot of lawsuits related to the opioid crisis in our country where, you know, thousands of people have died. And billions of dollars are being distributed to the state and local governments to help, for drug prevention, to help localities deal with the ongoing crisis. I mean, people today will die of opioid overdoses, and it remains a key problem. I'm not sure on what grounds. We haven't seen the decision yet to actually see what grounds the Supreme Court acted on. But I know that these opioid settlements with the pharmaceutical companies and the distributors of those drugs are have become an important revenue source for state and local governments trying to deal with this crisis. You know, maybe this is one of the issues that they should be dealing with tonight at the debate.
The other case that came out was what they call the EPA's quote-unquote downwind case, where the EPA was regulating air quality in that case, the Supreme Court in a 5-4 decision that came out today put that on hold. And while it's being debated in the lower courts, and what's interesting, as it notes in the Washington Post story, is typically they would have allowed this to continue in the lower courts, but they took the case and sort of proactively stopped the EPA from regulating companies, power plants and other plants whose pollution drifts from, you know, their state regulations, but the pollution drifts from one state to the next. And so the Biden administration's EPA imposed rules to try to curtail that to improve public health and environment. And the EPA put a stop, the Supreme Court put a stop to that case also.
In its first decision of the morning, the Supreme Court has issued a ruling on the Environmental Protection Agency's enforcement of an air pollution rule. A 5-4 decision with Amy Coney Barrett, Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, Ketanji Brown Jackson dissenting. The decision grants states the application to put the EPA's rule on hold as the case moves to the lower courts. The EPA's good neighbor rule seeks to restrict air pollution from power plants in upwind states that would affect air quality in, quote, downwind states. So that is one of the decisions coming out of the Supreme Court this morning. We did mention that we are also hearing that there was the ruling on the Sackler case. I just want to mention there are these blockbuster rulings that are still waiting, set to issue another set of opinions today, which we're seeing right now. And the big one, Donald Trump's presidential immunity case, also big, whether states are allowed to carry out emergency abortions. It appears that we know more about that than we thought we would without a formal decision being released. And even with the decision being leaked, or whatever we're going to call it, that official decision has not yet been released by the United States Supreme Court. And somebody wrote this in, and I just assumed people would assume this, but I guess not. If they had leaked the decision on Trump immunity, we would have told you about it.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. We would have been talking about it.
We haven't gotten that one yet.
But it's early.
Can I mention one other thing
about
that?
Yeah, that's true.
One other thing in the Post story about the environmental case is this is where it matters who your justices are. That they note that the Supreme Court, and I'm quoting here, the Supreme Court typically accepts challenges to these rules only after they go into effect, because this downwind regulation was not scheduled to go into effect until 2026. Typically, once it goes into effect, then they file a case, and then the case goes through the courts. But in this case, the court not only took up the case before the lower courts had resolved it, but, you know, stopped it before it went into effect. And the concern is that this will embolden the companies to – it's basically inviting other regulatory legal action on other environmental regulations. And so this does not bode well for those who are concerned about environmental protections. And so it really – you know, it's just a reminder of – decisions have consequences, and when you can appoint three Supreme Court justices, you know, this is what you get is less good air quality.
The other ruling, the second ruling of this morning, Harrington versus Purdue Pharma, the High Court is reversing the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit, blocking a controversial bankruptcy plan that would have provided billions of dollars to help address the nation's opioid crisis in exchange for protecting the family that owns the company from future lawsuits. And I don't see in what has been released so far of what the breakdown is of that particular decision.
And on that one, won't it be important, like, what's the reasoning behind it? Because are they concerned about the amount of the settlement, or are they concerned that the Sacklers weren't held accountable? I'm guessing it's the former, not the latter, but you'd have to wait and see what the decision is.
Anybody else on these decisions?
You know, meanwhile, we're waiting for the smoke from the Canadian wildfires to hit the area. Remember, it was just last year that we, about this time where we had these.
Everything turned orange.
Everything turned orange. We talk about, it was maybe 10 or 20 years ago, they had these what they called Northeast Air Pollution Compacts, in which agreements were reached among the states to reduce the amount of pollution from the coal burning plants in Ohio and other states in the Midwest, and it significantly reduced acid rain in the Adirondacks, for example, and we're seeing some of those lakes come back. So I know that, you know, what happens in one state affects the other state very dramatically, and if you can reduce the pollution in one, you can really have some positive benefits.
A little more information on the Purdue Pharma case. In its second decision, the Supreme Court has blocked Purdue Pharma's multi-billion-dollar bankruptcy settlement. The settlement would have excused and shielded the wealthy Sackler family and their company, Purdue Pharma, maker of the highly addictive opioid OxyContin, from lawsuits surrounding the country's opioid epidemic. The decision came, and here is what we were waiting for, 5-4 with Brett Kavanaugh, John Roberts, Sonia Sotomayor, and Elena Kagan dissenting. In his dissent, Kavanaugh wrote, "Today's decision is wrong on the law and devastating for more than 100,000 opioid victims and their families."
There are a number of lawsuits on the opioid case, and some of those have already been resolved and the money has already been dispersed, but this is a significant part of that. And the decision today leaves everything unresolved, I think. We still don't know. I mean, people are dying every day. By the time the courts finally step in and make a decision that sticks, who knows how many more people will have died.
It's not necessarily that that the Sacklers are going to evade having to pay billions of dollars eventually, but it's delayed justice now.
We are we do not know if any more cases will be released
or leaked.
We went through this morning or yesterday morning, and there were two cases. They do eventually tell you that they're done for the day. But we haven't gotten that word yet either. But we'll certainly bring it up to you if we hear otherwise in the next little bit. All right. Let's talk about the big debate tonight. And I say big debate because according to a poll, a majority of Americans say they are ready to watch the rumble. They are ready. They're going to watch the debate taking place at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now, a quick programming note. So, we had reported earlier this week that due to a kerfuffle between NPR and the folks at CNN, that NPR would not be carrying the debate, and we would have it on our website, but we would not be able to carry it. We would not have the license and the permissions to carry the debate. Somebody somewhere along the line said, I think part of the reason we have public radio is so that they can air things like a presidential debate. And so ultimately it has been resolved. And as of right now, unless anybody changes their mind, the debate will be aired on WAMC tonight. It will be anchored by NPR. And obviously with the wraparounds to the coverage being done by CNN. So if you would like to listen to the debate tonight on the radio, you certainly can do that. We all remember the Kennedy-Nixon debates in the sense, well, we don't remember them perhaps, but we remember hearing about them in the sense of, oh, well, if you're listening to the radio, you know that actually maybe Nixon won, but because of your watching television, you didn't see the profuse sweating, and that would appeared to make JFK the winner of that debate. Regardless of how you decide to take in the debate tonight, if you do decide to do so, we will be offering it both on our website as well as on air beginning at 9 p.m. tonight. Oh, my goodness, Teresa, what do we make of this?
Well, so many. I just want to go for the next hour on this. You know I do. But I want
such a resign.
Here's the thing. Trump is running on a disinformation campaign. And my concern is that so much of what he says, it's not based in truth, but it's been normalized. And that what really matters in people, you know, really matters is where they are on policy. And so I keep hearing these pre-debate discussions among the, you know, the chattering class on TV about, well, if Biden, everybody's going to look for him to make a mistake, you know, say the wrong word. And you know what? He's going to say a wrong word. Everybody does. Trump will probably say a lot of them, but I just hope that the focus is not on the one word. But what really matters here is where people stand on policy. That, in the end, is what matters in people's lives. And it's pretty clear cut. Because Trump has told us what he's going to do. Now, does he understand the depth of the policy things that he says when he says, I'm going to cut all the funding for, we're going to close down the education department, send it back to the states? Does he really understand what that means? When he says, you know, we're going to clamp down on the Justice Department and the FBI and he denigrates them. Do we really understand what that means in people's lives? Well, we began to see it yesterday. I know the story we'll talk about later, which is the Republicans are moving a funding bill with deep, deep cuts in the Justice Department. And so you want to cut funding for police? Well, the Republicans do. It's on paper, right? So the question is how much will be Trump bickering versus how much will there be any policy discussion? And then the other question, I think, with Trump is,
that he's a verbal bully. And, you know, would you want somebody who talks like him and acts like him in your house? And if you don't, why do you want him in the White House, right? You know, the way he treats people, the way he treats these issues. And also the last thing, and then I'll stop so other people can talk, is that there's all this talk about whether or not, you know, what shape Biden is in. But if you listen to Trump, even in the last couple of weeks, it seems to have gotten a lot worse. The whole story about the sharks and the boat and the battery, and what if you're on a boat and the battery's heavy and it's sinking the boat and you need to get in with the sharks. And he said that story twice. And then the story the other day
about his wounded body.
About the water. He's very afraid of water. And it's drip, drip, dripping, and the federal government is telling you you can't have faster water. And so when you put your dishes in your washing machine, there's not enough water. I mean, it's incoherent. So will he be coherent? Will he be belligerent? Will people just normalize that? And that's just saying Trump being Trump. Sorry, the court case came out.
So they've ruled in the Biden administration challenge of Idaho's strict abortion ban. So I guess since that cat was out of the bag, they have decided to actually release the decision in full. And I'm just trying to get to that on my magic Supreme Court screen.
They also have issued a decision on it says AP is saying the Supreme Court strips the Securities and Exchange Commission of a critical enforcement tool fraud cases.
Oh no, that's a bad one.
What does that mean, Teresa?
I'd have to look at it, but I don't want to say until I see how they rule, but I mean, that's not like the immunity case, but it's one of those niche issues where it's
enabling a kleptocracy.
Right.
We have been told by the Supreme Court that this is the abortion decision. Is the fourth ruling of the day. It will be the last of the day, and there will be more decisions coming tomorrow. That sort of goes with the thought process that if there was going to be a decision to be released on Trump immunity, that it would take place post-debate, and that certainly seems to be the case. Go ahead.
I think across the board, and Malia is weigh in on this, but these are not at the level of the immunity case, but across the board, environmental policy, security fraud regulation, abortion, these are all significant changes in whether or not the public has protections, whether or not the government is going to provide protections, and whether or not people have major rights. And this is just a clear indication of a shift in the courts and why voting matters. Mm-hmm. Malia, I didn't mean to talk too much.
Oh, you about
sorry.
I was just going to say the fourth ruling of the day is the Idaho emergency abortion ruling that was inadvertently posted yesterday that we've been talking about. The Supreme Court allows for now emergency abortions to stabilize patients in Idaho despite the state's strict abortion ban. The high court ruling applies while litigation in the matter continues. So it doesn't appear, at least on what I'm seeing, to have any major differences than what was posted online from the Supreme Court yesterday.
Well, these decisions are coming out under a Biden administration. Now, obviously, this court was shaped very much by then-President Donald Trump, and we have several relatively new justices on the court. I don't know how many new openings might come open in the next 4 years, but even if Biden wins re-election, you're going to continue to have this very conservative court that is trying to make federal government less powerful and smaller. So it's not a surprise that it's going this direction. But these particular rulings are going to have, even though they may be niche in some ways, like this Securities and Exchange Commission, they will have far-reaching impacts in terms of people's voice, their ability to hold others accountable, especially the most powerful among right. us who have a lot of money and are able to wield it for disproportionate influence. So it's disappointing.
We'll be take a break. Be right back.
Baby, baby.
Hospitals in Idaho that receive federal funds must allow emergency abortion care to stabilize patients, even though the state strictly bans the procedure, the Supreme Court ruled today, one day after the opinion was prematurely posted on its website. The court's unsigned decision does not address the substance of the case. Instead, while litigation in the matter continues, the justices temporarily reinstated a lower court ruling that had allowed hospitals to perform emergency abortions without being subject to prosecution under Idaho's abortion ban. At issue is the nearly four-decade-old Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act, known as EMTALA, which requires certain hospitals to stabilize or transfer patients needing emergency care. The Biden administration sued Idaho in 2022, saying the state's strict abortion ban conflicts with federal law that requires emergency abortions if needed to address threatening health conditions short of death, such as organ failure or loss of fertility. Anybody want to add anything to that?
Here we are in 2024. We're happy about that ruling. It's like it's at least for a few months, the women in Idaho right. can feel safe when they have a miscarriage and they have to, and they're bleeding profusely and headed to the emergency room. They're not going to have to wait until they're almost dead before a doctor can intervene.
Right. It's just, I'm going to repeat part of what I said before, but this idea that there's a difference between an emergency and something that threatens your life, like emergencies can turn into something. It's a spectrum, right? Turn into something that threatens your life. So you're harming the mother and by extension the fetus by not treating her in the way that she needs to be treated.
In the Washington Post headlines at the very end, the Supreme Court officially allows emergency abortions in Idaho for now. And that is that's the key to that is for now.
But basically they've decided not to decide. And why isn't this one an easy decision? Why isn't the life of a mother not an easy decision? Right? And what does this say, tell doctors? What does this tell women or couples? Right.
Well, I think it was it Samuel Alito. It was one of the
Alito.
Yeah, who wrote that the life of the fetus is one of the ones that has to be considered when you're talking about emergency treatment.
Right. So, but in these cases, often the fetus is not viable, which is why there's a problem. Right.
Yeah.
And the fetus is not viable over the full term. And so he's saying you should decide, but so I don't know. This whole group of cases is deeply disturbing. If people say, well, you got to understand each of these candidates, what a difference that they're going to make in your life. Well, you've got some answers today. These are Trump cases. You know, this is the Trump says we're not going to worry about air pollution. We're going to let, and you know, it's not so much forest fires. It's factories. It's manufacturers. It's power plants, and that they don't have to be regulated in one state even if they impact another state. Right. Mm-hmm. That's Trump's policy now.
And they'll probably use some kind of seemingly scientific reason, like that you can't pinpoint the air molecule that comes from such and such factory, that you can't say definitively there's cause and effect there. But I imagine that's the kind of thing that they might that's part of their justification. But that's ridiculous. I mean, we have data now from that just came out this year from the deleterious effects of the Canadian wildfires, exactly how it impacted Hudson Valley air quality. you know, the parts per million, the particulate matter just went way up. Now, can you say definitively, like, this particulate came from Ontario and this one came? That's the kind of ridiculous reasoning I expect that they're going to use, that you can't pinpoint exactly where it's coming from, and so therefore you can't make these laws. But that's a misunderstanding of science and a misuse of science for the public good.
Or weaken the SEC's ability to combat fraud. Okay. That's where we are. That's Donald Trump. He wants to weaken the SEC's ability to combat fraud.
I want to get into a couple more issues here before we go. We may go into extra innings. Is it okay if we go to 11 for all of you? Can you stay on? Okay,
yeah. Good.
I know you have a show to tape, but I bet I can get you a hall pass. So, Judy, this question was for you, and I don't mean – you'll know why I'm asking you this, but – I was really struck by a Washington Post story that I was reading last night, and I wanted to share it and talk about it for a second. The headline, Trump trusted more than Biden on democracy. So I read that, and I was like,
what does that mean?
So President Biden and his Democratic allies have cast his reelection campaign as a battle for the country's survival, warning that a second Donald Trump presidency would present an existential threat to American democracy. In speeches and campaign ads, Biden points to Trump's efforts to overturn the results of the 2020 election, his incitement of an angry mob that ransacked the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, and the former president's boasts that he will use the powers of his office to punish his political enemies. But that message may not be resonating with voters Biden needs in order to win another term in the White House. And here's the key. In six swing states that Biden narrowly won in 2020, a little more than half of the voters classified as likely to decide the presidential election say threats to democracy are extremely important to vote for president, according to the poll by the Washington Post and the Schar School of Policy and Government at George Mason University. So is this just not another way of reporting the fact that in the six battleground states, that Trump is ahead by 2 points, which is different than saying that a majority of voters believe that Trump is better on democracy?
Right. I think the article is trying to explain why he may be ahead on that, and maybe get away from these very repetitive stories about who's leading in the polls, trying to get a handle about why he may be leading in the polls. It's a way of casting the story to get some eyeballs on it, to maybe better understand it. I bet if you ask a lot of those people what democracy even is, a lot of people don't even understand it. I mean, some of these poll questions are confusing to people, especially people who spent way too much time not paying attention when they were in school. I mean, at the debate tonight, we're hoping that people are going to come away educated on the issues. They're not. Jake Tapper's He and Dana Bash has spent a week crafting these, you know, great questions. It doesn't matter. They might as well just say immigration, go.
Right.
Abortion, go. Because neither candidate is going to answer the question asked. They never do. And that's why these kind of debates are so frustrating to journalists.
I want to hear from you, Teresa. It bothers me that headline exists, that especially under a heading that says the deciders. Trump trusted more than Biden on democracy. And I just don't know if that's really true.
Well, I think part of what happens with Biden is there's a difference between democracy and government, but it gets conflated in some ways. And I think Biden is often in the position of defending government. And I believe in the power of government. I think we need to have government. But the federal government, I really empathize with people, even if they did pay attention in class. It's so big and confusing that it's opaque for a lot of people, even if they try to be well informed. And so even if they don't subscribe to the extremist rhetoric of deep state and they're not conspiracy theorists, it's there's I think a lot of people are just uncomfortable with how little they understand the system. And anytime Biden seems to be conflating the system with democracy, that could potentially harm him in the views of these voters who don't think that they're one and the same, that they don't understand government, so they don't understand how this bureaucracy is actually upholding their rights. It's hard to draw a straight line in every single case. So I think that's one of the challenges that he has as the incumbent.
Teresa?
Yeah, and I do think in a lot of these polls, if you look deeper in them, I haven't seen these particular ones, but they say, well, Trump's up by 2. But it's a poll that has a plus or minus of 6 or a plus or minus of 3. And I don't know if listeners know what that means, but that's an error rate on either side. So, in fact,
there's not much to
it's
say.
It's a wash. It's yeah. really not, you know. And so my question is, why so many poll-driven stories? And I do think often the questions are confusing and in a way misleading. But they're quote unquote easy stories to put out there because you have a number, you can put a number to them. But they are misleading, and it does create this aura that's not true. And I think you layer that into the Trump incessant. Again, it's a disinformation campaign. You say go on immigration. So Trump goes on immigration and he says, you know, how he built the wall. He didn't build the wall. His numbers were better than Biden. Not true. And also, when they had a bipartisan solution, Trump reached out to the House Republicans and he blocked the solution, even the solution that the Border Patrol wanted. And so that gets down into the weeds. It's complicated. But he doesn't want to fund the stuff to help deal with the problems at the border. That's all boring, you know, government stuff. But Biden knows how to actually get things done. I think the healthcare thing is a perfect example. Trump says, you know, we're going to get rid of Obamacare. Okay. But he has nothing to replace it with. That's not going to help people in their lives. But he has to be called out on it. And he's not called out on the facts. Of, well, what are the implications of the rhetoric that he's saying? It's a lot of empty rhetoric that he gets away with, and will he be held accountable for that?
It's also strange to me as to what facts they wish to bring up that are when they fact check.
They're not going to do live fact checking either.
No, not on the debate. But I thought it was interesting. There was a breaking news on CNN that Trump at one point said that Joan Rivers voted for him, and then they reported that Joan Rivers had passed prior to the So, you know, it's things like that that
the ghost of Joan Rivers.
Well, right, but I just
election
I'm
fraud.
Like, I'm like, I think there's other. You know, yes, it's an example. It is an example, but one of many examples, and I think there's far more serious examples.
But for instance, he says Afghanistan would have never happened if I'd been there. Well, it was his decisions that laid the groundwork for what happened in the exit of Afghanistan. But he doesn't. You know, he doesn't take any blame for that, and they don't hold him accountable for that. He says, well, I'll end the Ukrainian war in 24 hours. Okay, that sounds like a strong man. Everybody wants a strong man. Exactly how you're going to do that? The only way you're going to do that is
abandoning Ukraine,
right?
Hey, I think they should go beyond the conventional wisdom and ask different kinds of questions, like, name me your top, you know, name me any one of the amendments in the Bill of Rights, or what is the Bill of Rights? Ask them some basic questions and see who can answer them. That would be a little bit more challenging for both of them. They'd have to actually answer the question. We really want these debates to show whether they know how government operates and whether or not they can be good leaders. And I think just giving them opportunities to spout the rhetoric we've been hearing for the last 4 or 5 months, maybe to a new audience that may be tuning in, not like us that we tune in all the time. But, you know, go off course, Jake and Dana. Ask some weird questions, you know, that they wouldn't be. Ask them about what's going on in Sudan. Ask them something that they should know, but maybe they're not prepared to give us a stock answer.
Or ask them, you know, think about the incredible turnover in the Trump administration of the cabinet members and such, and how many are, you know, how many are now saying that they don't think he's fit to be president. What about saying X number of your former cabinet?
It's like Scientology, though. I mean, they just discredit everyone who leaves the cult, right?
Don't do the boxer and briefs thing.
Which tell-all book would you believe? What?
Yeah, don't do the boxer and briefs question. That.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, in fairness, MTV. But okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about the Justice Department and funding for the Justice Department. We'll discuss that. We have a wonderful panel, Teresa Bourgeois, Malia Dumont, and Judy Patrick on a busy news day. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. Going into extra innings with our panel this morning, a lot going on, so a lot to talk about and things that I want to get to. Because I know tomorrow we'll be talking about the debate, and I know tomorrow we'll probably be talking about more Supreme Court decisions. So we have a busy day today. We have a busy day tomorrow. Let me get to this story, which has to do with funding for the Justice Department and a good debate going on for Merrick Garland, who decries the House GOP proposal to cut the Justice Department funding by $1 billion. Merrick Garland's remarks come after it was announced that the Republicans would slash the Justice Department's budget, saying such cuts would risk undermining progress in reducing violent crimes nationwide. This effort is unacceptable, Garland said in a news conference in Cleveland, where he traveled to mark the opening of a new intelligence center to help state and federal prosecutors to combat gun violence. Garland's remarks came hours after the House GOP unveiled a fiscal 2025 budget proposal that would set justices' funding at $36.5 billion, about $3 billion less than the amount President Biden is seeking. Some conservatives have targeted the Justice Department for cuts as part of their opposition to the criminal prosecutions of former President Donald Trump. Trump was convicted, of course, last month on 34 felony New York State counts of falsifying business records. Teresa Bourgeois.
Yeah, I think this is a very clear case of, you know, don't tell me what you value, show me your budget and I'll tell you what you value. And the other thing is the argument that the Biden people are making is that, you know, Trump cares about what's going on in his life, Biden cares about what's going on in your life, and here's a perfect example. This is a retribution budget. This is, you know, the quote-unquote lawfare that you hear about on Fox News as they attack the Biden administration. But in reality, you know, they're trying to reduce the number of prosecutors, cut deeply into a range of programs, including, as I understand it from listening to some of the budget hearings on this, there's funds that go directly to law enforcement at the local level for their law enforcement work. And so at the same time, Trump and say, oh, I care about the police, they're trying to cut the budgets of the FBI, cut the budgets of the ATF, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, because they don't like gun restrictions. And that's going to make us all less safe. And so they are the ones who are trying to, in this case, defund the police.
Right. And it's also the U.S. Marshals Service and the Drug Enforcement Administration. Right. So those are the other elements.
And in a backdrop of, you know, just think that it was just determined this week that gun violence is a national health crisis, right? Mm-hmm. And think of the difference between how is a Biden administration going to address the national health crisis of gun violence versus how would a Trump administration address the national crisis? They would not say it is, and they would not allow you to collect data, and they would cut funding for those kinds of programs. So what is it that you want? And is he going to be held accountable for these cuts? He says, I love the police. But then they're proposing these deep, deep cuts to fund them.
It's law enforcement. It's also the federal government's power to litigate on a whole range of issues. So civil rights issues, antitrust issues, tax, environment. I mean, all of these lawyers that specialize in these various areas, they they are in the Department of Justice. And so I haven't looked at the details of this proposed $1 billion cut and where it would hit the hardest, but one assumes that such a large cut would affect all of these areas of the department.
And ironic, given look at what Trump's done with the courts in the last couple of years in his own cases. What he's done is litigate as a delay strategy, right, to slow down all of the prosecutions against him.
I'm sure he wouldn't mind not litigating many civil rights cases or many environmental cases.
Right, you know, right. Just to clog the courts, just right. Like they've created, because they're not funding the infrastructure at the border, it's not working, and so Border Patrol have to do the work that other people, other government staff should be doing because the House and Senate can't get funding passed, right? That's the bill that Trump blocked. And this will be the same thing with the courts. If you don't have enough people, it's like the IRS.
Yeah.
You cut the funding for the IRS and they can't do their job. Right?
Something that's pretty unique in the DOJ, I mean, you have environmental lawyers inside and outside government. People can specialize in that in various places. And so you can have watchdog groups. But there is a national security law division in the Department of Justice. And a lot of that requires security clearances. You know, you can't really practice that kind of law effectively or with full transparency of the issues from outside government. And so that's something that I'll be looking for closely if these proposed cuts go forward and in the details of how it'll affect those really unique things that reside within the U.S. government.
It does seem like it's clearly retribution, but I mean, from a journalist's perspective, I want to see the details. I mean, any budget can be cut, and sometimes there's some spending that's not done wisely. Defunding the police is never popular, but I've seen some grants made that, I mean, question the validity of how effective they are. It really, but again, I think the overall thrust of the cuts is to penalize the Department of Justice. But again, I think we shouldn't just knee-jerk say this is bad. I think we should take a hard look at what they're really proposing to do and to come to some sort of middle ground. I think almost any budget can be cut.
But they marked up these bills. These bills are moving through the appropriations process. So people, I mean,
I'm trying
of course,
to find
only
right
wants
now.
Like me.
Yeah.
But it's the details are there. The details are there about the kinds of, because the COPS programs, which is a direct funding to police, are one of the ones that I listen to them talk about wanting to reduce, but also they want to reduce the number of prosecutors. So, in any case. Joe, there was one other story that you had sent earlier that I very, very briefly, but in South Carolina, three Republican women
yes.
were, they lost their seats. And I think I urge listeners to pay attention to that one because they lost their seats because of their stance on abortion. But also the voter turnout was extraordinarily low. And they said overall in South Carolina, you know, they were a moderating force and the majority of the people, according to the polls, they were on their side of these women. But they lost their seats because people did not come out to vote. It's a very important signal. You need to come out and vote.
It's an interesting story, and when I...
Sorry, I didn't mean to throw that
like
in.
No, that's fine. We are out of time, though. We have to get Judy over to the taping and the media project. We have to get everybody else on the road, you know, before the hot dogs start taking over. My thanks to you all. Have a wonderful day. I appreciate you all being here. We'll be back right after this.